Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
If I asked you to stay here, here with me, would you?
No.
Hello, everybody. Right? This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 30, Ray of Hope. And now here are our two rays of sunshine, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, episode 30.
I know.
TF.
Dave, would you like to issue your apology of the week?
Sure. Remind me what I'm apologizing for.
That the podcast did not go up on Monday at all.
Yeah. Sorry for that delay. Yeah, that was my fault. I uploaded the wrong file. Didn't match the name of the file in the feed, so it just couldn't be found. So ironically, it was up there, but it just wasn't available through the feed, so it wasn't getting to your podcast program. Wah, 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 wah.
As we record this, episode 29 has not gone up yet, and I made Dave like quadruple check it. To make
Once again.
Sorry.
Yeah.
David!
Reminder, you can go to glarkware.com and buy t-shirts inspired by this podcast, including Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know, Sex Out 1996, and
Still
Pleasure
one
Hut.
Sale for Sex Out.
I think the person who suggested it said that they finally got around to buying.
We shamed ourselves into one sale.
Look.
Hey, it works. Hey, whatever works, guys. You know, we got to support this podcast somehow.
And that's
if it's
right.
Like individually getting addresses to people and like sending them a postcard that says, you said you would buy one, and then sad face.
Like the paper boy in Better Off Dead. You owe me $5. Also, you can buy ads in this podcast. Go to previously.tv/ads for details. $100 for a commercial message, $50 for a personal message, $20 for an Dave word, of which, by the way, Dave, there is one in this episode.
Oh, okay.
I will cue you after the B-plot.
Good to know.
Sarah, are you prepared?
I think so.
Let's do it. Starting with our C-plot. Good grief, more Prince stuff. Steve is still in a neck brace and with his jaw wired shut. So after Brandon sees Susan off to a newspaper's editor's conference in D.C., where nothing of note will probably happen, cough. He parks it on the couch to keep Steve company, and they end up on an old episode of Vegas, or rather Vega Dollar Sign, which happened to be an Aaron Spelling show. I mean, what are the odds? And later, Prince Carl shows up with flowers for Steve, which, like, what 20-year-old guy wants fucking flowers? Like, bring him a bottle of whiskey or something.
Yeah.
Anyway. Steve thanks him enthusiastically, which is good. He's actually good at receiving gifts, Brandon. And Prince Carl doesn't watch much TV, but he's psyched to settle in for an old episode of Matt Houston randomly until Steve says that Claire is bored and Prince Carl should take her out and entertain her. And Brandon casts doubt on Prince Carl's motives, but Steve has no qualms. And Prince Carl and Claire end up at Eclipse, the one restaurant in town. And
Thank
Claire's
you.
Hair, once again... So it's like they dye it every week. It's different. This time it's like with very aggressive, dark, dark low lights to balance out the skunk stripes that she had like 3 weeks ago. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's like she's trying to transition into some like Morticia Adams situation, mm-hmm. which is like, just do it,
right.
please.
Yeah.
Like we understand what hair dye is. Just dye it.
Yeah.
Do it. Get it done.
But she doesn't. It's still this in-betweeny nonsense, and you can see it in the visual aids, of course. There's more small talk about their childhood shenanigans, which soon turns into big talk, because Prince Carl is very good at this. Let's hear clip two.
Well, at least your mother always believed in me. She knew I had potential.
She did?
Yes.
Do you remember your 10th birthday party?
Yeah, my mom let us drink champagne out of her glass.
She told us whatever we wished for that night would come true.
So what'd you wish for?
Tell you the truth, I don't remember. But I do remember your mom had lots of plans for you. You know what she told me after you went to bed?
No.
She told me that you and I would be married someday. She wanted you to grow up to be a princess.
My mom was a hopeless romantic.
And you?
I think I stopped believing in fairy tales the day she died.
You must miss her very much.
Yeah, I do.
Again. And we've been corrected extensively on our forums at previously.tv about the Prince Carl name.
I don't care.
I don't either.
I mean, yes, we have.
Here's why. First of all, spell it with a K, which they don't. Second of all, when he pronounces words like married, again, what is he the prince of? Somerset County, New Jersey? Because this is not... What is his fake country?
They don't even say. They just say Europe.
They do, but it's like Fiasco or...
Oh, I don't know.
Contretemps or Montmartre. That's it.
But that's not a country. That's part of France, isn't it?
You're asking me?
I'm pretty sure that's in France. I will Google it on that clip. Montmartre. Montmartre is how it's spelled in France.
Oh, is that where that...
say, don't be such a surf.
Is that where that crazy castle that you can only get to at low tide is?
I don't know.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're right.
No, that's Mont Saint-Michel.
Oh, okay.
But yes, he has no kind of even like fake European accent. Like they cast this actor because they thought he was cute. And then they were probably like, can you do something that sounds like vaguely German? He was like, nope. And they were like, we don't care.
They were trying to backdoor pilot this guy?
Yeah, maybe. That would explain a lot. Because he does get, spoiler alert, a nice send-off. Like he's, you know, they don't ruin his character. Yeah, that could be. Who knows? But yes, to the spelling thing, the one that everyone was citing to us in the thread, apparently that is Carl with a C also, which, whatever.
I still don't care.
I still don't either.
This kid is from fucking Jersey. That's it.
That's the thing. Like, it would be fine if he was a Carl that sounded at all European, but he doesn't. Like, he's from here. He's from the store. Like, he's not exotic at all. It makes no sense. Anyway.
Carl Bukowski.
Le centre de Roqueville. Okay.
Right.
Take it easy.
Anyway, the next day, he makes Steve a smoothie and tells him to quit being so boring, but nicely. And he wants Steve back to normal in time for Steve's birthday. Steve doesn't understand why Prince Carl is going to all this trouble for him when Steve is just a peasant. But Prince Carl doesn't need a reason, he says. He has one. It's called Claire's Pants. Later, Claire tells Donna that hanging out with Prince Carl makes her think about her mom and what her mom wanted for Claire. So mission accomplished, Prince Carl. However... Claire isn't going to tell him about her mom musings because she doesn't want him to get the wrong idea. And then by the end of the episode, Steve has his neck brace off and his jaw unwired and decides the best place to take Prince Carl and Claire to thank them for putting up with him in his convalescence is, that's right, the fucking peach pit. Unpinch a penny, Steve. Worst thank you gift ever.
He did agree to pay, though, which would be a first for anyone.
True. Moving on to our B plot.
Well, let me just get this bit of business out of the way so we don't have to dwell on it in the next episode.
Yes.
Steve's birthday coincides with the spring formal, right? Don't he and Kelly have a big blowout about it because she forgot it?
Yes.
But that's way earlier in the year, no?
Spring formal? It's hard to say because... When it happened in way back when in season one or two, it wasn't like they started the year not in September. Well, I can't remember. I mean, I guess they started the show earlier than September, but it was still supposed to be the beginning of the year, I think.
Okay.
I can't remember. Regardless, it's still spring. It's not prom.
Right.
So presumably this would, and this is after the end of finals at college, which would make it in May. So yes, they screwed up.
Yeah. So they fucked up again. Okay.
And
just wanted to be on the record with that.
And Montmartre is in Paris. It's a hill.
Okay. I think Mont Saint-Michel is what Dave is thinking of. That sometimes it's an island, but sometimes you can walk there.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. Moving on to our B plot.
This has been Castle Talk.
Colin on the Lam. After some blah sniping between Val and Kelly, Val and Nat go to the Peach Pit after dark, where our old friend the bail bondsman is lurking around threatening them about what's going to happen if Colin doesn't come back. And I couldn't get a clean shot of this for the visual aids, but he's smoking. And I think, I mean, mostly I assume to make it look like he's disrespectful of their establishment by smoking in it. But also, like, am I crazy or was he very bad at smoking? Did you notice?
I did. He is very bad at smoking.
Okay.
Like, very, very big gestures and a lot of like mouth puffing. Like, that's not a smoker.
Okay.
That guy.
That's what I thought. And maybe that's why they like cut around it for once ever. Like, that I couldn't really get a shot that showed how awkward he is with it. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, the whole blocking of it was very daddy's boy. It's not really the menacing baddie they were going for.
Anyway,
sorry.
He's there to threaten them about what's going to happen if Colin doesn't come back, which is basically he'll take the club and Nat would be out money too, because blah, blah, partnership, blah, equity, blah. There's talk of hiring a private investigator to try and find Colin, but such a person would take 25% of the bond, meaning they'd have to make up 25 grand themselves. Colin sucks, in case you forgot. Here's how much he sucks. He's hanging out in a bar with Danny Five in clip 3.
Shouldn't run, man. The rest of us all go off on a legal search. They dropped the charges while you were doing your OJ imitation. It's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, that's hilarious, isn't it?
I don't know. Maybe you should just do the deuce. Get it over with.
Deuce.
This is a whole new accent for Danny Five, right? Yeah. I'm not crazy.
It's a bunch of accents. Like, at the beginning, he sounds like a leprechaun, and then all of a sudden we're somewhere in South Brooklyn in the 40s. I don't even know.
He's going to take Colin out and play stick pool.
Like, frutazoi, potato lad, take it easy, guy.
Yeah. Well, especially since we're soon to find out what his actual last name is, and it's not Irish at all. But anyway.
No, it's not.
He's also officially giving Colin more sensible advice than Kelly did. But Colin, the most unjustly convicted guilty suspect in the history of the American legal system, flatly refuses and says his plan is to flee to Mexico. And Danny Five has to point out that he would need ID to do that. And that leads us into clip 4.
So can you help me out? Talking some major cash.
That's great. First I get popped because of you. Now you want to rip me off?
Oh, boy. Colin. This is why you don't go on the lam without a plan and some money, you idiot.
Well, and also, like, ID, fake ID costs money to make. Like, you have to pay the guy who makes the ID. That's how that works.
Excuse me, sir. Do you accept fake cash?
I made some cash myself.
These are, what's the guy's name?
Danny Five.
These are Danny Five bucks.
No, oh,
they're
sure.
They're Colin bucks. They're redeemable at all Colin stores.
They're just like regular money, but they're fun.
Oh, God.
Like, Danny Five made his own deal. You're not his problem anymore. Colin is A. B. As Sarah pointed out, it's not like he can just go and get, like, a library card and give it to him, like, need a picture and stuff.
And C. Have you thought of checking this douche for a wire? Like, why do you think it is that he's out? Presumably his fingerprints were all over the shit that you had on you.
Right.
So it's not like they had nothing on him.
Right.
They have to have let him out for a reason. So what? Like, why would you just be like, please help me with my plan to go on the lam? Am I coming through out there in the van? Idiot.
You're so right, but I never thought of this because that isn't actually what's happening. Like, that would be the logical thing, is to put a wire on Danny Five and assume Colin is this stupid because he is.
I only just thought of it now, so I guess we're all idiots at crime, but we didn't try to do crime, so that's the difference. Also, can you tell we're struggling to find things to care about in this plot? Correct.
The other thing is Colin acting like Danny Five owes him because of their friendship. Like, no, you're not friends. You never were friends. You are a customer, and not a great one, also, as I recall.
And he is thrilled that you tried to run like a jag and became the bigger criminal, and now they don't care about him as much. Like, shut up, Colin.
Completely.
Just get off the show, please.
Anyway, somehow Colin does have some amount of cash, which he gives to Danny Five, who gives him a beeper because it's the past. And the next day, Val has figured out that Colin might have reached out to literally his only friend, Danny Five. Brandon is supportive. Just kidding. He's a bitch about it in clip five.
Good idea. We'll look him up in the yellow pages. I'm sure he's listed under drug dealers. Or we could just go down to the corner of Crack and 8-Ball. I'm sure he'll turn up there eventually.
No, I think Kelly knows where he is. I was thinking maybe you could ask her.
Sure. Yeah, I could do that. But, you gotta go with me.
Never mind.
Val, you and Kelly can't keep going around and around like this. You want to ask her for her help, do the right thing.
Pardon? Pardon me? Pardon?
What? All right, first of all, did you feel like he's used that locution of the corner of Crack and 8-Ball before?
Yes.
I feel like we've heard it before.
I think it might have been Dylan saying it, though, but I might be wrong. But yes, we have heard that before for sure.
Yeah, because it's exactly the kind of deadly non-joke. Anyway, also, what is he talking about?
Yeah.
They hate each other. It's not a do-the-right-thing issue. Either you want to help Val out and help Nat in the process, or you don't. You want to stay out of it, which I get, but, like, shut up.
It's also infuriating for the viewer for him to frame this in the terms of, like, the right thing, when we know Kelly already did the wrong thing, which was have Colin show up on her doorstep and not fucking turn him in so that Val would not lose the club that Kelly is always at, by the way. Like, this is already all on Kelly, but I feel like the show is trying to make us seem like, no, Val, it's more important that you guys get along. Like, no, it's not. Kelly broke the law.
Yeah, it's really not. And then the next few episodes spend the entire runtime setting it up as, like, Kelly's, you know, getting past her feelings for Val by helping out, like,
please,
enough. She's a bitch.
Well, speaking of her being a bitch, Brandon finds Kelly in the good old student union with Val close behind, and he starts to launch into his pitch, and Kelly is a bitch about it in clip six.
We came here to ask for your help.
Oh, well, if it has anything to do with her, you can forget about it. You know, I knew this was a mistake. She doesn't care about anybody but herself. I certainly don't care about you, Val.
Ladies, neutral corners, huh? Listen, Kel, this doesn't only have to do with Valerie, all right? If we can't find Colin and Valerie loses the After Dark, then Nat could lose the Peach Pit. So, will you listen to this for Nat's sake?
Yeah, I'll listen. For Nat's sake.
Bitch!
Whatever. Also, her hair looks like a dandelion, and I hate her.
It looked so good for, like, three episodes.
It did, and now...
Now here we are. So yep. Kelly directs Brandon to drive to Danny Five's house and for some reason lets him drive her car. Good. She goes to the door alone and doesn't enter until he says his roommate isn't there. In fact, he moved out after she hit him with the wine bottle, which is, again, nice continuity, I thought, that it would make sense that she would remember that guy and ask before she came inside. But anyway... There's awkward small talk before she gets around to asking about Colin, pretending it's because she loves him, which is all it takes for Danny Five to say that Colin's in L.A. and gives him her beeper number. And she buys a gram just to keep up appearances and manages not to snort any despite his very generous offer. And outside, Brandon decides it's been too long and cock walks up to the door to rescue Kelly, but she's already coming out. He also matches his cock walk with cock talk in clip 7.
Did you buy anything?
Yeah, I had to.
Give it to me.
Brandon, I'll take care of it.
Give it to me.
I'll give it to
or
you.
Or what? You'll but, drive home? Fuck you.
But he does take it from her. I think he dumps it out, and this is like the best
she
night.
She dumps it in a trash can, and it's like blowing everywhere. Like, can't you just throw the whole gram out?
Closed. In the container. Anyway.
Yeah,
getting to lord this
recycle.
Over.
Yeah, okay.
Getting to lord this over, Kelly makes this the best night of Brandon's life. And in the next scene with them, we find out why Brandon is driving Kelly's car, and Kelly is a bitch about it in clip 8.
Why don't you try and page him again?
I've already paged him 3 times, Brandon. Maybe he doesn't know it's you.
Valerie, I think he's called my car phone enough to know that it's my number.
Oh, that's right. He's in love with you. I forgot.
Guys, he's probably not even in L.A. anymore, okay?
What if he is? What exactly do you plan on doing? Are you going to ask him to politely turn himself in, or are you gonna just going to charge right in there and take care of things?
I'm not afraid of Colin.
Oh, and I am.
Ladies, we're on the same side on this, okay? If he calls, I say we set up a meeting and we call the police and let them do their job.
So the way he keeps calling them ladies is like he's their field hockey coach or something. It's so obnoxious.
Yeah, it's really. And then at the end of this scene, there is a, and there will be a gif of this in the visual aids. Like some, Kelly thinks she scored some point.
Oh, we're not there
off
yet.
Off of Valerie.
We'll come up to that. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Yeah.
So the
cuntiest little smug smirk ever. Ugh.
So just when they're about to give up for the night, Colin does call. And Kelly says she has to see him. He says it's not safe. And she says, please, with like 1% urgency. And then he agrees. But he'll call her tomorrow. And because the phone's on speaker, everyone hears this. Clip 9.
Ooh.
I love you, Kelly. I need you. I need you now more than ever.
That's when the fucking smug smile comes in. It's so bad. I did make it. There's a picture and a gif both.
Oh, I don't remember how I felt about this at the time. I don't think I hated her nearly as much as I hate her now, but that was such a bad look regardless. Like, I remember that. I remember being like, but you brought him into this show. Like, this is all your fault, basically.
Yeah.
Wipe that face off your head, bitch.
Which Val tries to make that point in the next episode, and then Kelly just turns it back around on her when she's like, you knew him first. Like, what? When they were teenagers? The fuck? Anyway, the next day, Colin calls to tell Kelly the shitty motel where she should meet him. And when we see him in the window, he's still in the same shirt and, like, t-shirt and button down that he fled in. But the neck of his shirt is all, like, dirty. Like, was he rolling around in something, A? And B, he couldn't take it off and wash it in the sink? Like, and if he had cash to give Danny $5 for his new ID, he couldn't use some of that to buy, like, a new shirt? It's so dumb. Anyway, she claims that she can't get there for 3 hours because she has a doctor's appointment. And he accepts that before he hangs up, he asks if he can trust her. And she immediately lies very convincingly that he can. So then Kelly and Val and Brandon all show up in Brandon's car to watch Colin get arrested. But then the guy who gets marched out of the motel room isn't Colin. It's Danny $5. Or, excuse me, clip 10.
Check the register. Danny Fivinski.
I don't know why that was so funny. Danny Fivinski.
47th Street, Manhattan.
Okay. I don't know. Anyway, Kelly asks Danny $5 where Colin is, but he denies everything. And as they're taking him away, Brandon is still surging with testosterone in clip 11.
You know, you can bet if Danny was in that motel room, Colin ain't far off.
Colin ain't far off, eh? Hey, oh. Bada bing, bada boom.
You're
I'm
Canadian.
Tiny. Oh.
Dude, like,
shut
you
up.
And Ryan Gosling both need to quit it with the tough guy accent because it's not convincing from either of you. You're Canadian.
No.
And the three gangsters bicker about whose fault it is as they leave, and that's it for the B plot. But before we move on to our A plot.
Spanakopita.
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, okay. Then why are you laughing?
Because it's a funny word.
Oh, I see. The only reason I know that is from the Venture Brothers episode that takes place in said town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll see also why I know how to pronounce Ilios from Overwatch. That's a level in Overwatch. Thanks, pop culture. You're figuring out Greece one city at a time.
And now for our A plot, Donna and all her dudes. This is the cold open. Donna and David are suddenly such important music video producers that they're being photographed with the sleazy manager. His name is Eric, and Donna is in a lavender suit like she's producing a video for the DAR. It's the craziest outfit considering the setting. Like, she does not look edgy at all.
No. Except that the skirt is maybe 12 inches.
Oh, yeah, it's really short.
How does she sit?
She doesn't in this scene, I don't think. Apparently, before we got here, they were also photographed signing fake contracts. Sounds like very dynamic photographs for this exciting business. Eric hangs up a call he was on for 3 seconds and tells David and Donna this, clip 12.
I knew this was going to be magic. We just signed this amazing band. You're doing their video.
And they, like, immediately start freaking out, even though he hasn't said who it is. They're just like, oh, a video. Like, that's what all of this was about. You're way too excited with no information.
Yeah. And also, how was all that information communicated in yet another TV phone call that lasted no time and in which no one said either hello or goodbye?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, television.
Well, Mystery Band is playing at the Peach Pit After Dark, the only club in LA. And finally, Eric tells them who the artist is, and it's Ray. And we get an accidentally hilarious montage of his greatest hits, no pun intended.
In which you could actually see the stunt double Don Nold, Mandonna.
Rolling down the stairs.
In way better than you could in the original, because they did it in slow-mo, and it's just this guy whose name is obviously Frankie. Like, yep.
There is, of course, a gif of this, and it's in the visual aids. And after the meeting, Donna is very reasonably not okay with this development, and David is still the worst collaborator any person ever had in clip 13.
Well, there's always a bright side. At least they didn't stick us with the Charlie Manson band for our next video.
Don't joke about this. I am freaking out here. I cannot work with Ray.
Donna, we have to at least have this meeting, all right? We owe that much to Eric.
Well, what am I supposed to say to Ray? I can't, David.
Donna, relax, all right? It's over between you and Ray. Besides, he's not going to want to do this video with us any more than we want to do it with him.
I mean, if Joe finds out about this, he is going to flip out.
You know what? It's none of my business, but I don't think you should say anything, Joe.
How can I not?
Donna, we're going to have this meeting, then the whole thing is going to be over.
You think so?
Yes. Why cause any more problems?
Fine. You're right. I won't tell Joe.
David is the worst. Why don't you just have her back? Like, this arrangement is obviously one video old. They're so high on you that they're photographing you for, like, the fucking trades. Like, just say, we have a history. If Google existed, you would already know about it. So, like, no?
Yeah. No. And even Eric, like, Eric is a sleazy doofus, but I don't think he's that kind of sleazy doofus.
No.
I think if it were like, why don't you just call down to the Los Angeles Hall of Records and see what we're talking about, and you'll see that this is impossible.
Like, how would it possibly be good for the record company to be like, well, we were involved in this court case several months ago, but, like, now we're going to make a piece of art together? No, you're not.
Yeah, you're really not.
Anyway, speaking of Joe, he's apparently getting a clean bill of health from Dr. Martin, who's like, you're all better forever. Pretty lucky Donna happened to be watching TV that one night, right? I'm paraphrasing, but seriously, it's been a month. Like, they wouldn't need to keep monitoring him for a while after experimental cardiac surgery? I guess not. And by way of goodbye, Dr. Martin tells Joe to reserve Rose Bowl tickets for him. And Joe says he's not sure he'll be playing football next year. Except I don't know why he says he's not sure, because he already knows he's definitely not. He's going to go back to Pennsylvania and coach football at his old high school and take over the program full time in the fall. But he hasn't told Donna yet.
Because that's just that easy.
Right. Like, you don't have to have a degree Pennsylvania, to be a teacher.
Right. No. It's like Texas up there. That's, well, whatever. Shut up, Joe. Let's just get rid of Joe.
Seriously. So he
Let's
says
let
he, hasn't,
it happen.
He hasn't told Donna yet and asked Dr. Martin not to say anything since he doesn't know when he's going to tell her about it. Great. And so you know how David said Ray wouldn't want to work with them either? Wrong. He's super psyched, according to Eric. And they all meet up in Eric's office. He takes off to let them talk, and David actually tries to get them out of it for Donna's sake.
On his way out of the office, Eric is like, all right, you guys talk, and then we'll all go to the eclipse on me.
Yeah. Like,
find another fucking restaurant, people of Los Angeles.
Especially since they don't even go there. Like, just say another name. You know, who cares? Let's all go to Sardi's anyway. So, they discuss this in clip 14.
Look, Ray, we all know the chances of this working are slim and none. So why don't we just tell Eric that we had creative
it's
differences?
It's not the expression.
You feel that way too, Donna?
I don't know.
Look, I've given this a lot of thought. Number one, I loved what you guys did with the Power Man video. I thought it was amazing. And number two, you guys know me, and you know my music. And this song I wrote, Reckless, well, it's kind of about who I was. Nobody knows that person better than you, Donna.
Ray, please.
Look, I'm talking about second chances. A chance to show y'all that I'm a pretty decent guy. I know it's a lot to ask for.
Yeah. Like, why would Ray want this? I don't get that either.
I really don't either. And I mean, also, you did not love what they did with the Power Man video. you asshole. Don't troll them.
God. Oh, and God. Then a brunette opens a side door and offers to come back later, but Ray tells her to come in and introduces her as Wendy Stevens and says they're engaged. And Wendy knows all about Donna, maybe not all, and seems normal and nice. And as soon as Donna sees there's a new woman in Ray's life, then now she's interested in hearing Ray's new material. So he tells her to come to their show the next night. And everyone else leaves to go for dinner. And when Donna and Ray end up alone in Eric's office for a second, she tells Ray she's happy for him. And he's also happy for him. So great. Anyway. The next day, Donna and Joe meet up at the Peach Pit after dark. And she mentions that she tried to call him the night before. And he says he was on the phone with his mom because it's the past. He asks about her next video. And she is more forthcoming about her plans for the immediate future than he is in clip 15.
You know, you're not gonna believe this, but, it's Ray's band.
Ray? As in Ray Pruitt?
Yeah.
And you're gonna do this?
Joe.
After what he did to you?
You know, I think he's really changed. I mean, he's doing great, he's engaged.
Okay, it's your decision.
Come on, don't be like that.
Don't be like what? You've ever heard of the word loyalty?
You know, that is not fair. I am loyal. I mean, this is business, nothing else.
Well, I guess you'll do whatever you have to do.
Joe. Wait a second. I mean, can't we even talk about this?
Talk about what? Sounds like you already made your decision.
I mean, Kay? Like, first of all, whatever. It doesn't matter. But, like, you did the same thing, and I don't know. Shouldn't your concern be that she's willing to even consider it? I don't know.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just really, as usual, ill-considered.
Right. But it also has to, well, we'll get to it. So, barf, then the show has to remind us that in the end, Brandon signed off on Ray for doing the right thing in his trial or some bullshit as they meet back up in the Peach Pit After Dark green room in clip 16.
Thanks for everything.
What do you mean?
Well, a while back, you were honest with me when I needed to hear the truth, and I'm just really glad I listened to you.
Looks like things are working out pretty well for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm trying real hard.
Cool. Hey, look, we'll see you at the pit later, huh?
That was your clip, Sarah. Want to go ahead and dig into that one?
Well, not really, because you intro'd it pretty effectively. Like, the show not only acts like this was not a, you know, basically stalking and abusive relationship, but that Brandon fixed it like he fixed everything else. And that the important thing here is that everyone realizes that Brandon affected positive change is just so horse shitty that it makes me want to vom. And yeah, that's it.
All right. Vom. We agree. they get past it because... Donna and Joe get past their issues because he ends up joining her for Ray's show, but it's kind of just to spring a trap for her in clip 17.
Well, the reason why I'm not interfering with Ray's video is that I'm hoping that it's your last one.
My last one? I thought you supported me.
In this job she's had for 4 days? Like, really? Like, you're running for office. I thought you supported me. Give me a break. Anyway, he launches into this whole ramp up about what different people they are that ends up here in...
Oh, God.
Clip 18.
Everything that happened. My heart. Not being able to play ball. Changed me.
Yes, of course. It's made you even stronger.
Maybe. All I can think about is what Steve Young told me on my birthday. When he talked about figuring out what to do with my life. I think I figured it out. What I'm gonna do.
What is it?
I want to go back home. Back to Beaver Falls. And I want more than anything for you to come with me. I know it's a long way from the fast track in L.A. to being the wife of a high school football coach in Beaver Falls.
Way to sell it, bro. Mm-hmm.
But I love you. Will you marry me? Say something.
I don't know what to say.
Say you love me. Say yes.
And after this, there is a literally endless act out of Donna making every simpy face in her repertoire, which is vast.
Yeah. Ugh. The idea that we would think for one single second this was actually going to end up in them getting married is ridiculous. But anyway, spoiler alert. Claire comes home to find Donna. Claire comes home to find Donna sitting in the dark, and she tells Claire about Joe's decision to move back to Pennsylvania and his proposal. Claire can't believe it and asks what Donna said, and Donna didn't say anything apparently, but 19.
Beaver Falls sounds beautiful and all, but...
Does it? Because yeah. It sounds kind of ridiculous to me.
Speaking of sounds, this is so 90s, but Claire is wearing a pair of vinyl pants and they are creaking quite loudly in this entire scene.
Awesome. Anyway, Donna says she's an LA girl. She does love Joe. Joe wants her to change her whole life and to decide right away. And Claire is a really great friend and offers to stay up with Donna and talk about it. But Donna says she'll be okay. And the next day, Donna's at the Peach Pit After Dark praising Ray and Wendy for their great show. And I finally look up Wendy and realize I'm remembering her from when she played Joey's Days of Our Lives co-star on Friends. Not even like a character in the show. She was like on the Days of Our Lives within the show. But also, She's Marisol Nichols, Hermione Lodge from Riverdale, who's apparently like shaved down her jaw or something.
I never would have recognized her.
She's unrecognizable. Her whole head looks completely different. The only thing that's the same is her eyes, basically. The whole shape of her face is completely changed. There are pictures of Wendy then and Marisol now in the visual aid, so you can see them side by side and marvel at the difference. But anyway... Wendy says that Ray wrote some song Donna particularly liked for Donna, and Donna makes the smuggest face ever, which is also in the visual aids. And Wendy excuses herself so that Ray and Donna can say goodbye, which they do with minimum weirdness. And I really hope this means they never saw him again, because enough already with Ray.
Yeah, it was sort of a short episode, which indicates to me that we had to hear Reckless and probably the encore Second Chances in the original, but then they couldn't get the rights to it because who would want them?
Fair. Donna takes Joe for a walk on the beach to give him her decision, and when she starts by saying she loves him, he figures there's a butt coming and is correct. She says she's too young, and this is where she tells him, apparently for the first time, all about Felice's unplanned pregnancy and shotgun marriage at a very young age and miscarriage, even though Donna found out all of that stuff when she was dating Joe and somehow never told him until now, but okay. But she knows her mother still wonders about how things could have turned out differently if she'd waited to get married. And Donna's not ready to leave her family and friends or give up all her dreams. And as we heard up top, she turns it around on him and says if she had asked him to stay here with her, would he? And he's like, no. Also, he's leaving tomorrow. So great. Cue one of TV's favorite tropes, the totally congenial, totally mutual, not at all acrimonious breakup in clip 20.
I'm gonna miss you, Donna.
I'm gonna miss you, too.
This is the part that I'm not really sure what we're supposed to do. It's over. I guess this is where we say goodbye.
No. It's just the beginning. For both of us. King!
Thank you. kiss you one last time?
You don't have to ask.
If you hurry up about it, fuck.
Bye, Joe.
And we never saw him again.
Oh, good. That's it.
Well,
let's wrap it up,
have,
I say.
But fuck off. Jesus. Poor Cameron Bancroft.
I mean, I'm sure we've said this in previous episodes, but like, if you look him up now on IMDb, he looks so much cuter as a silver fox, by the way. He probably still can't
act. He was good in Mystery Alaska. I mean, he had like three lines, but they were about hockey and they were very convincing.
Yeah. He's cute. He's fine. I don't have a problem with Joe other than that he was boring, although that doesn't really set him apart from the rest of the season now, does it? It's your most valuable player.
Mine is Joe, because first of all, nope, it was pretty funny. And second of all, he's like, so you're not marrying me? All right, bye. And he pieces out and it doesn't drag on.
I'm going to say Claire, because I really was impressed that she would even offer to sit up with Donna in the dark and talk about this proposal that's clearly not going to go anywhere. That's a really good friend.
And Kathleen Robertson really had a nice bit of business there where she was like equal parts, like, overjoyed for Donna, but also like scandalized and weirded out by this announcement. It was, she's good.
they
don't give her anything good to do, but when she gets something, she runs with it. So,
agree. Least valuable player. Colin, wash your shirt and then do everything else right that you haven't been doing right since you went on the lam.
That's a valid choice, but I will be going with Brandon. You're not the dad of the world. Shut the fuck up and let Kelly drive her own fucking car, you fucking fuck.
I've got one.
Oh.
The immigration dude at Ellis Island who didn't change Fivesinski or whatever.
To five?
Yeah.
They should have actually changed it to five legally?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's do a user-submitted challenge.
Oh, wait, are we doing... Oh, never mind.
That's next time.
Yes, sorry.
No problem. This is
I'm confused.
It's okay. This is the Stargazing Bee Challenge, who asks, five ways the episode would have been improved with David dancing. He could have moonwalked out of the office when he had to come face-to-face with Ray.
He could have acted out their pitch for a video by dancing all of the parts, including Donna's.
He could have tried to coordinate his dancing with driving, going back and forth across lanes and having fun that way while trying to talk Donna into making a video with Ray.
He could have, actually, he should have been the flower delivery guy for Steve and he should have done a little dance, like a fan dance, but with the giant flower arrangement.
He should have been dancing in their photo shoot for the trade magazines to prove his musical bona fides, and that makes five.
Bone. Next time and again with this, Joan is knocked up, Colin gets locked up, and Brandon gets cucked when Susan takes the job. You'll need to take some Maalox before checking out our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslyTV. You can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm Beavis Sarah D. Bunting. I'm here with Butthead Tara Ariano. We're on Twitter at Tomato Nation and Tara Ariano. And our producer's the corner of Crack and 8-Ball, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.